webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 28th of November 2013 from the steam-driven, polished mahogany Gospel Revolution studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee. And from behind the curtain entering into the Holy of Holies in Houston, Texas, please welcome the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Yes, Barris, thank you so much. I'm going to have to teach you how to introduce me like I answer the phone here.
How's that, Michael?
People ask me, who is this? This is the most holy reverend, Michael Williams.
The high poobah.
Yeah, and then if it expands, it gets to be the most high holy reverend. Good morning.
Good morning to you. This has been an interesting 24 hours, hasn't it?
It has been. We've had a 24-hour delay on our recording of the PowerCast, and I'll let you know, it was no fault of mine at all. So I don't know who else you're going to blame this on.
Well, there's only two of us here. I think it's pretty clear what you're trying to say here, mate. Hey, Mike, do you remember this from last week? Remember that, mate?
I do remember that. I think we got some comments from it.
We did. And I love, I first latched on to this girl, Joanne McFadder is her name. Joanne, J-O-A-N-N-E, McFadder, M-C-F-A-T-T-E-R. Gosh, 15 years ago. And she works a lot with New Age folks. And so a lot of her songs are really very different. She's in the Christian fold, but probably right out there on the cutting edge of people who are looking at different ways of looking at things within that whole worldview. So her name is Joanne McFadder, and Jeannie Schultz sent us an email, said, I was just listening to the latest podcast, Grace in Freefall, and loved the song at the end of your program. I searched the web for the song, but didn't find that exact one. I was hoping you could get that info for me. I would love to buy her CD. Jeannie, you go to www.joannemcfadder.com. Are you having fun? Are you having fun? You go to www.joannemcfadder.com. You can buy all of her songs. I think they're about $1 or $3 each or something. And you can just pick and choose what you want. That one is called Altogether Lovely by Joanne McFadder, and thanks so much for feeding back to us and letting us know that you like that, Jeannie. That was lovely.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when you were talking about her, where she is in the Christian movement, oh, it's so nice to call it a movement. If it's a movement, it means it can move on, yes, and move out. But the thing that struck me about your comments was the progression and where she happens to be in the movement that has taken place in her own thinking. And, you know, Barris, that's where we are right now. We're in a world full of people who are on the march. You can go back through history and mark the physical migration of people from continent to continent or from one side of a continent to another. You can mark these migration moments. But we are in a migration of thought that I think is unprecedented on the face of planet Earth. And even as back then, they didn't realize they were in a physical migration that was going to change the way we've actually do things by that migration, this migration of thought away from Christianity. We all know where we're moving from, and it's like people who immigrated even into the U.S. or Australia or from one region to another. The only thing you knew for sure is where you were leaving. You'd heard stories about where you're going, and most all of them are good stories. Some of them turned out not be so good as stories. But the fact is that migration takes place when you know you want to leave where you are. May not tell you exactly where you're going, but that's what a migration is. Now, I think we are locked into a migration of thought, which mirrors the migration of the last few hundred years, that is going to create a world where that in thought, we go anywhere we want now. We're not going to be locked in like we were to have to think this way, or you can't think this, or you can't think that. But we really are migrating to a point where that people can experience our whole last power cast, this incredible free fall of thought. And if there isn't anything about it, it's a free fall of thought. Then that free fall of thought is that place where you don't have to fear you're going to hit the bottom because of the way you think or that you do think. So when you said that, it triggered all that. Isn't that amazing?
Don, this is going to be a long show, folks. Hey, as you were talking, I was just thinking this, that there have been a lot of things that have led up to this space-time continuum mm-hmm. that we're living in right now. One was the 60s and that whole flower power or whatever you want. Yeah, that
I remember.
Shaking the foundations loose. And then another was the internet.
Yes.
It's a lot harder to keep them down on the farm now because of the internet. And all of these things have you know the way that Christians are voting with their feet out of institutional Christianity is really interesting, but it didn't happen until the internet really got going.
I think that is correct. And you know, the internet of years past was ocean travel, and that is what began to connect continents, is that they began to build ships that could cross an ocean. And also the ability to realize that they weren't going to fall off of the edge of the ocean if they did something. The internet now is literally facilitating this migration of thought, the same as the sailing ship facilitated the migration of human beings around this planet crossing oceans. And we are crossing oceans. Oh, my goodness, Barris. We'll take you and I as an example. When we realize where we were 30 years ago, the migration of thought to this wonderful new land we now live in, I can't even imagine that I used to live in such a horrible place.
As strangers in a strange land, but it's an awfully nice strange land, isn't it, mate?
It really is. I don't pretend to understand all of where I am, and a lot of what we do on this PowerCast is talk about what we're seeing as we kind of trip along through this and experience it and listen to the experiences of others. We're all in this together. Those of you in the Gospel Revolution, those of you just tuning in for the very first time, maybe on this PowerCast, I know I live in a different place. I know I migrated out of the entire thought life of a Christian. I have no thought life of a Christian anymore. And it is the most powerful thing that has ever happened to me. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew where I couldn't stay. I lived in a country where there was oppression and there was no freedom whatsoever. And we may have set sail on a rickety ship, not knowing exactly where we were bound. And it's now called the Gospel Revolution. And people are now feeling pretty secure in jumping in on this, knowing that others have made this journey before them. And gosh, you guys, I just want to encourage you just to stay in this journey. It's yours. It's yours individually. There are some things collectively that we know, but we don't all have to agree on everything individually to have this collective experience, we also have a very powerful individual experience that just hearing about each other's experience encourages each other, which, let me put a plug in here, please call us and tell us about your experience.
Well, speaking about that, mate, let's listen to one. We got to call you, and we got pure gold this week, mate.
Really?
Yes, it was total gold this week, Michael. We heard here from Josh Tenney. Listen to what he said.
Hi, Jeff and Gospel Revolution. This is Josh Tenney, and I'm calling to leave a voicemail message about the gospel. And thought that came to my head today was that I am thankful that I don't have to do mental gymnastics and psycho-religious activities and exercises and weary myself with the business of denying the sovereign one who bought me. And that's really good because I'm not weary anymore. So that's my story. Stick into it. Love you. Bye.
How about that, buddy?
Oh, yeah.
Josh Tenney.
Yeah. That's an immigrant.
Josh is an immigrant?
Yes.
Where from?
From Christianity.
Okay, I love it.
Wow, Josh, thank you so much for calling in. These are the rich things that we are looking for. Look, this is a few seconds. And Josh, you've helped everyone to understand the entire concept of this very PowerCast itself, the entire concept of this PowerCast, and that is that we are one.
Gospel Revolution.
We're talking about strangers in a strange land today, family, and we got such a lot to get through today, mate, but we'll get there. Have a look at this book I'm holding, Michael. You see the book? Man, I owe Bob Hines for this because he sent this to me through the mail, and a book just arrived, and it's called The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind by Mark A. Knoll, N-O-L-L. Now, this guy is an evangelical himself, and the point he's making is that modern Christian evangelicalism has sold its brains out, sold its birthright, actually. When you think back to people and it doesn't matter if we agree with them or not, but people like Calvin, people like Luther, people like Zwingli, people like Isaac Newton, people like William Wilberforce. When you go back and think of these people, they had two things. They had a mind that was conditioned to think, and they had courage to say what they thought. But what's happened in Christianity today is probably best reflected in a comment I saw on Facebook the other day. Somebody was making a point, and somebody else said, that just sounds like too much thinking. Why don't you just believe it and rest in the Lord? In other words, hang your brains up. Mm-hmm. You come into this church. Well, they didn't say church. It was just a comment on Facebook. But essentially, the idea is thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy strength. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy... Thou shalt love the... Look, just leave your mind out of it. And this is the only place, when you think about it, this is the only place you can go when you start teaching mythology and expect it to be accepted as reality.
You really do. And let me tell you, I enjoy myself a good dose, a little dose of mythology. But boy, let it be on one of my little TV shows. You know, they do a real good job. And but when you add this mythology to the work of the cross and to the scriptures, you come up with something that, quite like the dragon in the cave, it literally comes out and scorches and singes the entire essence of everything that the work of the cross and the scriptures tell us. It's so strange that the one thing that they fight against the most is the virgin birth. It really is odd to me that the things that are spoken of by the scriptures are looked at as very odd, while people embrace something even more odd than that.
That's the truth. If it's like there isn't enough oddity already, and of course, what else would you expect if God intersects humanity? but oddity. It had to be odd.
But, it would have to be God.
But yes. As if that's not odd enough, we had to go and invent a personal Jesus with a personal decision and a personal Savior and personal sin and personal confession. We had to invent a whole bunch of mythology like altar calls and pastors and laity being separate, being different, ministry and laity. There is so much mythology. Why don't we just think? Don't listen to the guy that said too much thinking. Just believe it. What he's saying is hang your brains up, do like we do, or we won't like you, we won't accept you. And the way, if you want not to be accepted by us, is just try thinking. Family, I'm here to tell you, and I've got a big old sign up on my wall here, it says, and it's Uncle Sam pointing his finger at you, and it says, I want you to think. We really don't care what you believe, family. We care that you think to get there. We care that you just don't swallow what anyone, including us, say. We just care that you do love the Lord your God with all your mind. If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader. Persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules. God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts. Rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape. But those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules. And Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Gospel, gospel, gospel revolution.
Now listen, mate. I wanted to tell you. I wanted to take you to a story that I read in the Huffington Post, and I'm moving along fairly snappily today, simply because we've got so much to get through that you don't even know about, mate. But that's what I like to do to you, just shock you a wee bit. And this. I know that you'll enjoy this story because it tells us how God has, in Illinois, you remember those Illinois tornadoes? They had something like 80 in a day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. It was gay marriage law, the new gay marriage laws up there that actually caused that.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah. They've tracked it down to God being unhappy with gays. I don't understand. Apparently, a couple of people were killed who weren't gay. God's got an awfully bad aim, doesn't he?
He really does. I remember as I began to learn the gospel of peace, that was one of the things that I challenged people. You know, if they consider Sodom and Gomorrah or the any of the things that God did bring judgment on, he was very direct. But I remember bringing up Universal Studios, all these things, you know, that we've said were the judgment of God. And the fires in Orlando back years ago was because of the gays. Pat Robertson said it was all because Disneyland developed a gay day once a year to where that gays could bring their families and feel right at home without fear of demonstrating their family values and taking their kids to the park. And a fire broke out in Florida, and it burned lots of Florida, but it missed Orlando. So that's when I start telling, kind of like in this, that, well, you know, well, it's been a long time ago since those things happened in the scriptures, and God's a bit older now, and he can't see as well. Maybe he probably can't hear as well.
That's it.
And he's just off a little. We just have to compensate for age with God. And you can figure all this right into this mythology.
Well, here are some disasters caused by gays in 2012, according to Christians. These are things that happened in 2012. Now, it's a year ago or more. And according to Christians, they have traced these things directly to homosexuality in America. The first one was the Aurora shooting. Remember that? Colorado, that movie theater, where 12 people were killed and 71, I think, were injured. That's because of homosexuality. The second one was the Marikana massacre, August 16th, in South Africa. Now, a lot of Americans haven't heard about this, but police opened fire on striking workers at a platinum mine, killed 24. Conservative pastor Errol Naidu linked the massacre to homosexual agendas. Hurricane Isaac is another one that several Christian extremists spoke out about, linking this dreadful hurricane 7 years after Katrina, and linked that to the LGBT festival. Conservative pastor John McTernan wrote about this in a blog post, so I'm glad that God spoke to him, because now we know what caused it. We have the Benghazi attack. Our embassy in Benghazi, right around the other side of the world, was attacked because of homosexuality here. And it's, see, if it wasn't for these Christians telling us this, we wouldn't even know this, mate. We've got to say thanks to them. Now, that preacher, John McTernan, he got in again with Hurricane Sandy, Michael. That was caused by homosexuality. And this guy's got to be really in touch with God, because, I mean, that's some highly detailed stuff. Newtown shooting on December 14, 2012. Is another one that is directly due to having systematically removed God from our schools, according to Mike Huckabee. And he said it that was the reason why that Newtown shooting. Just dreadful stuff. Mums and dads grieving, and people are saying this stuff and passing themselves off as somehow having God's ear about it.
Yeah, and then actually being able to run for the highest office in the land at the same time of having such idiotic concepts. It is mind-numbing to think about. But
God got me a parking space at Walmart the other day, and I'm here to tell you that, mate.
There it is, and that is the full reason Jesus died on the cross, is so that we could have parking spaces at Walmart. Oh, man, we are sailing. We got to leave this mess behind somehow.
Some things just don't even be. I mean, you just got to pass over them and say, yeah, really. Okay, let me, and I wanted to bring this up today. Today seems to be a bit of a catch-all, but I wanted to bring this up because when you get free of all of the do this and don't do that's that religion puts on you, suddenly you don't know what to do. When communist countries came out of communism, this was really obvious. They weren't cared for anymore by the state, and they didn't know how to do it for themselves. But as we say here, follow your heart.
Yes.
Follow your heart. Here are the top five regrets of people who are dying. Number one, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life truer to myself, not the life others expected of me. Gosh, we could stop right there, Mike. Second, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. That's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk about the Puritan work ethic.
Yes. And when you get ready to die, it's the thing you wish you hadn't done.
In insurance, we used to say, I've never heard of a widow who said my husband had too much insurance. Well, I've never heard of a person dying said, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. But yeah. I imagine that's what they're saying in this list. I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Michael, I can't tell you how much that would describe me. I wish I'd had the courage to be transparent and honest about everything that I thought and felt my whole life. I didn't, but we're moving on. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And the last and fifth one is I wish that I had let myself be happier. Almost none of these, when you look at Christianity and religion, almost none of these are possible within that mindset. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life truer to myself. Couldn't do that. I wish. Maybe I could have worked as hard. I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Can't do that. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. In many religions, when you leave that religion, your family is anathema to you. You can't even speak to your friends. Mm-hmm. I wish that I'd let myself be happier. Can't be happy when you're a Christian. How can you be happy when you're always trying to please somebody else?
You know, the odd thing about it is that there is this false sense of happiness. It's kind of like the Stockholm syndrome and many other things where people are captive to something. They actually find a way to have some happiness within the group where you are bound to. But let me tell you something, personal, individual. This is what's so magnificent about the gospel is this. We take away this personal, individual redemption and salvation. And what it does, Barris, when we become, as we use the term loosely in the gospel revolution for sure, this universal way of thinking, it literally does release this personal expression of those things. So the more that you personalize the expression of spirituality, the more uniformity you have with individuality of people in the group. You lose your individuality. You lose all these things that when death comes, you wish you'd have done them. Why didn't you do them? Well, there's maybe many more reasons other than the focus that we're putting on it this morning, but I guarantee you Christianity in this forum is a culprit that would keep you from pursuing these things. And but this transition, we literally transposed where freedom is supposed to be and where choice is supposed to be, and we placed one in the spiritual and switched it out for the natural and took that the things of the natural and transposed it into the spiritual, and we've come up with a huge bondage for people. But when you step out of that, I remember very well that transition of people coming out of the old Soviet Union, and I remember we were just devastated. They actually had an interview with a guy getting on a bus, going back to the airport, and they interviewed him, and he said, I'm going back, and I will never forget that interview. And they asked him, why would you go back after you've escaped all of this? And he says, and he told him, he said, this is freedom. He said, I have to pay my rent every week. I have to make sure the utilities are on. And I have to, all of these things he made a list of. If we're not careful, people's ability to think for themselves and creativity, which can only come through individuality, it can only come when you're free to be yourself. But you let too many years pass by to where that all of your ability to think for yourself has been completely squelched, and the creativity that's in you has been shamed away. We talked about this a bit in a couple of powercasts ago, of even in my own experience, of just being shamed where that any personal expression that I had was just shamed away. You let that happen too long, and let me tell you something. Even when you get free, the possibilities of you finding that you had in its full ever again, wow, even with the power of the gospel, you still have an entire arena of exploration to revive from the dead your freedom to think and the freedom of your own expression of the way you feel. It is, it really is a tragedy that has taken place, and it has been a tragedy of the mind. It has been a tragedy of the power to be creative in the human being, and we're hoping to see that come alive as much as possible.
Well said, mate. Now, Mike, we've got a couple of stories this week, and when I read these stories, it made me ask this simple question. Outside of religion, outside of Christianity, is there any real proof? We talk about one. We talk about God and us being not like one or as one, but being one. Your book is titled One. Is there any proof of this oneness outside of Christianity?
Well, there is. One of the most powerful ones for me was, I remember it's been actually in the last 3 years at least, I was watching this gentleman. I would have to go back and find him again. But he was proposing that we are one as a reality. He made the comment that he felt that he had proof of that. Boy, did that perk my ears up, and I was listening intently. He made the comment that people all agree on, and that is that the most basic instinct in humanity is self-preservation. He brought up a small handful of a stranger walking by, a building was burning, the stranger runs inside, rescues someone out of the burning building, and at the risk and peril of his own personal safety, the person who jumps into the frozen lake trying to rescue an absolute stranger. These aren't family members that he brought up. These were passersby who happened upon strangers whose lives were in peril. And he said, I have absolute proof that we are one. He said, because self-preservation is universally accepted as the most basic instinct. And if self-preservation is the most basic instinct in the human race, then why jump into the frozen river to save a stranger? Why run into a burning building to save a stranger? And his conclusion was, because there is something in us that knows that person in that building is us.
Wow. And that is, I've never heard anything like that. That is, that's wild.
Oh, it is. And it really did. I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to the time where that we don't have to have these extreme moments that causes us to reach deep to find that we are one, to where that just as we walk around without tragedy happening, we find out we're one. We know we're one before that shocking event where a stranger is in a desperate situation and about to lose their life, and suddenly all that we know in our mind is dismissed, and something is tapped so much deeper than that, and we put ourselves at risk for this person. But now, see, we're still in a state of evolving into understanding that we are one, that it takes a shock. It takes a real shock to our thinking to invoke this, that's me. Politically, we're not there, obviously. We look across the aisle and say, that's me. But you know what? We've proven that put us in desperate danger, and we are there. Even politically, it crosses political lines when that danger is a threat to someone. Even those walls fall down in a very incredible way.
You're reminding me of the last verse of Hebrews 11, the famous faith chapter, or the last couple of verses, where it talks about all of these old heroes of faith, these old timers who did incredible things. And all of these people who did some pretty wild miracles, some of them, it finishes up by saying, without us, they were not ever made complete. They could not be made perfect without us. That word in the Greek, perfect, meaning complete or mature. They could never come to perfection without you, me, and
yes,
everybody else. So what you're talking about is there is, this gentleman is saying, there's evidence of oneness in the fact that we save another because we believe that other and I are one. And Hebrews chapter 11, the last few verses, indicate the same thing, that whatever perfection is,
mm-hmm.
whatever this is, we're in this boat together.
We're all in this together. We cannot exercise one from the other and come up with any reality of this. Now, you've brought up the end of Hebrews chapter 11. The first of Hebrews chapter 11 goes back and even addresses the comment about it sounds too complicated. Stop thinking about it and just believe it, you know. And Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 has something to say about that. Now faith is. Wow. Now, oh, man, that's got my attention. Now faith is. So faith ain't what it used to be.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah.
So now it is something that it wasn't. Obviously, it is now something that it was not. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. We now have this substance and this evidence. And according to, if you read all the way through these individual faith experiences, that the ultimate of this substance and this evidence is that we are now all one. And that is the substance. That is the evidence. And the faith that Christianity teaches divides the individual faith, the personalized faith. But according to this chapter, faith has had an accomplished work that has produced the substance of everything we ever hoped for. And number one is that unity with God, that God and man is one. There is no longer struggling to close the gap between God and man or between myself and anyone else on this planet. It's the evidence of things that were never seen. And according to what you just read in the closing of this chapter, it is indeed that we have been made complete together, God having provided some better thing for us that they without us can't be made perfect.
Now, that word perfect, the literal meaning of that word perfect is it is finished.
Yes.
it means it's accomplished. Ah, at last, the deed is done.
The deed is done. Faith has been fulfilled. Now, why do we rail on this? You know, we've talked about many subjects, and we will go back and recap so much of what we've learned in the Gospel Revolution. And one of these issues is faith. You know, Paul did not advocate that he had faith in Christ. Paul advocated that he knew Christ. He said, not that I may believe in him. He said that I may know him. And he said the very crux of the reason that I may know him is that I've laid aside all of these rules and regulations. I've laid aside everything of the old covenant. And now I know him and the power of his resurrection. To every degree you give up self-righteousness, self. Think about it. What does personal faith produce? It produces personal righteousness. Oh, my gosh. I am so glad to be freed from faith. Ah, I am empowered by faith, but I am freed from having to have my own, Barris. And by doing so, that has freed me from self anything. This focus on a personal Jesus with a personal faith and a personal belief and a personal experience and a personal relationship leads to someone focusing on nothing but self. It is inevitable. It cannot happen any other way, to the point that, oh my gosh, I could think of 1,000 stories now of things where people can be so dismissive of others because this is where my personal belief is. And this is where my personal faith is. And almost to your destruction, I will hold on to my personal faith.
Well, the thing is, all of that personal stuff leads you to one place, personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are – we want God, Jesus to be responsible for our sin on the cross – but we want to be responsible for our decision to follow and our faith and our Lord knows what. We want we want what's very pick and choosy stuff, isn't it? I mean, like, it's very eat the meat and spit out the bones. It's I'll take that decision thing, thank you, and I'll take that personal savior. I don't want the personal responsibility, though.
No, and that's in the realm of spirituality. And and this is where we've transposed this powerful understanding that we're given, especially through Paul's teaching and the through the scriptures, is that the personal decision about spirituality or responsibility about it, Jesus took completely on himself. Jesus was the responsible party. Jesus was the believing party. Jesus was the faith party. Jesus was the one who fulfilled all these things. Now, if all of that's gone off of me spiritually, what that transposes to is that naturally now I can have an individual experience where I do take personal responsibility for everything I say and do without excuses. And if you take personal responsibility for your actions between people, not between you and God, but between people, you'll be able to resolve those things with people, if you so choose.
Good stuff, Michael. All great stuff. I love it.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
I'm just going to play a soundbite that we picked up this week that you shunted in my direction.
45-year-old Richard Rinaldi is looking for someone. Two someones, actually. Two total strangers who were meant to be together.
This is Dominic, right?
If only for a moment.
Okay, so you guys are going to be a couple. They're not exactly sure what they've just signed up for. Actually. And people are a little nervous at first. Okay. I just need you a little closer. Like, okay, good.
Richard is a New York photographer working on a series of portraits.
Okay, good.
For each shot, he grabs strangers off the street, like Jenny Wood, an airline employee from Virginia, and Dominic Tucker, a college student from Brooklyn, and poses them like adoring family.
Beautiful. One, two, and three.
Richard calls the project Touching Strangers. He started shooting it 6 years ago and now has hundreds of portraits of these unlikely intimates. Some of the photos, you'd never know they'd never met, while others capture quite well the inherent awkwardness of cuddling some random dude.
Hey, nice meeting you.
Even when the subjects seem eager, their body language often concedes a certain hesitance. At least at first.
Oh, cool.
10 minutes later, though, it's like Thanksgiving at Aunt Margaret's. And that's the really weird thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, Richard puts the people in these poses, but the sentiment that seems to shine through is real. At least, so say the subjects.
Okay.
It was sort of awkward, but then sort of not.
You guys did so good.
We are probably missing so much about the people all around us.
This is Reiko.
At first, Brian Sneedon, a poetry teacher, saw no rhyme or reason for posing with 95-year-old retired fashion designer Reiko Ehrman.
Can you just come in like a little more? Yeah, okay.
But eventually, he too felt a change.
I felt like I cared for her.
Cared for her.
Yeah, I felt like it brought down a lot of barriers.
Pretty much everyone.
It was a good feeling.
Shared that same sentiment.
It was nice to feel that comfort.
Everyone seems to have come away with kind of a good feeling. It's kind of lovely. It's lovely.
Most photographers capture life as it is. But in these strangers, Richard Rinaldi has captured something much more ethereal and elusive. He shows us humanity as it could be, as most of us wish it would be, and as it was, at least for this one fleeting moment in time. Steve Hartman, on the road in New York.
Now, that dude is making families out of perfect strangers. He's making families out of thin air, Mike. And when you see the movie, when you see these people, he doesn't just park them up next to each other. He has them with their arms around each other, leaning on each other's neck. He has them in such intimate, family-only poses that when it's done, they say, I really felt for them.
Interracial and everything. The thing that makes you believe they're family is the is the closeness that you see. Their skin color says these are not family, but the photo, you would never doubt that this was family whatsoever.
Maybe it's easier to be one than we thought.
Paris, I'm telling you, it's just beyond the veil. Let me tell you, we really are just beyond the veil of this incredible veil that was rent 2,000 years ago and torn. Now is only a veil in our minds. And but the veil that divided us from God and us from each other was completely removed. And all that we feel in contradiction to each other is just a veil. It really is just a veil. Human relationships can be very complicated. But I think what he showed here is that without the need to work through all of our differences, let's just drop the facade and see if there is something inside of us that connects immediately before we know our opinions, before we know the things we disagree about, before we know people's positions. And lo and behold, without those things, we are one in the very essence of this. And I think the first example that I gave about the most basic instinct is self-preservation, and then watching people run into a burning building, and then this guy's experiment on the streets with absolute strangers, finding that these people found that they have a connection, and it's just a veil. It is just, man, he simply stood there and pulled the curtain back and said, okay, stand here together. And they felt something for each other. It was very powerful.
All of these things are referencing, touching something within us all, which is a sameness.
The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen.
You know, that I don't know if that photographer was religious or an atheist or whatever, but it really doesn't matter because he touched reality. He touched the evidence of things not seen.
He did. He touched the reality of the gospel itself and the substance. He found the substance of this. He found the evidence of it. He produced evidence. The person that runs into the burning building to save a stranger, that's evidence of things not seen. That's substance beyond anything. Man, I tell you, if you want substance the substance of things that were only hoped for, goodness gracious, you may have a lot of substance, you may have a big bank account, but the substance of things not seen is when somebody, a total stranger, risks their own life to save you. That is substance. That is absolute substance. And this incredible evidence that is produced in this little video, it's very powerful. You'll enjoy every minute of it.
Well, let me just get that for you. I have this up on a page called www.faithit.com, faithit.com, and you're just going to have to write this down. /photos-strangers-posing-together-moving-humanity/. All those dashes are hyphens. So that's www.faithit.com/photos-strangers-posing-together-moving-humanity/. And the movie's sitting right there. Family, until you see it, you won't believe it, I promise you.
I was thinking that even if you get confused by the long address, I would think if you just Google most of those words that you'll be able to find that.
Say sorry again. I never get a sorry from you. I'm just basking in that. Hit me up with that. No, I think I know.
I'm sorry.
No, it was I'm so sorry.
So
there was a big
sorry.
Old so in there.
Please accept my apology.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Now, talking about substance and evidence, talking about the fact that faith is now different, and what is the conclusion of it? The conclusion is that we are one. Talking about that faith and talking about that substance and the evidence, Somebody wrote a story on our Facebook page this week, and I wish I could remember these people's names. I am so bad at this. But they talked about twins. And what they said was, when you look at twins, and I encourage you, family, just to Google these two words, twin stories, stories about twins. You hear these amazing stories, Mike, twins that finish each other's sentences. They might get sick on the same day hundreds of miles apart. They prefer the same perfumes without even having met each other, brought up as adopted kids in two different families. They write poetry which is almost identical. They love the same TV shows. One of the best twin stories that I know of is the twin Jims. I'm just going to read this very quickly, and then we'll have a chat about this, because the bottom line in this a comment on Facebook was this: if twins can be so identical in so many ways, even if they're apart from each other by 500 miles, and they do the same things and love the same things and feel the same way and love the same colors and use the same perfumes and have the, if that is how strong that their oneness is, even without ever having met each other, how strong is the one that God created in this new creation? The twin Jims story goes like this. Jim Lewis and Jim Springer were born in 1940. The boys were adopted by separate families in Ohio and grew up within 45 miles of each other. Both were named James by their adoptive parents, both married twice, first to women named Linda and then to women named Betty. Both had children, including sons named James Allen. Both owned dogs named Toy. After reuniting in 1979, after 39 years of separation, the twins were recruited for a study, and the results of their tests were amazing. Their medical histories were identical, and the pair shared the same habits, including having woodworking workshops in their garages, a fondness for Chevys, and vacations on one particular beach in Florida. Now, talk about joined at the hip, Mike. These are joined at a far deeper level than the hip, eh?
Yes, for sure. And when you see that just genetically that this can take place in twins, spiritual genetics is just as strong, Barris. And the spiritual genetics of all of this is this completion and this union. Has faith changed? Oh, my gosh. Well, the power of the fact that faith is something else, but whatever it was, it's not what it was, because now faith is this, and this is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And as you pointed out, as the conclusion of Hebrews chapter 11, same chapter, is this absolute completion, that without one, the other cannot be perfect or complete or matured, brought into fullness. The finishing part of this entire thing can't be done until faith has turned into something else. This is how far we're missing this in Christianity and in all of the spiritual world. We are still struggling with faith and not accepting what faith now is. It's just one of the most amazing things that the human being could ever even trip upon.
To listen to a lot of religious folks, you would think that actually reads now faith does. But it doesn't say now faith does it?
It does not say any of that, or now faith will. Now this is what faith will do. This is what faith does. And if you have faith. None of those connotations are in there. This is just a statement about faith that is qualified by the fact that it is now something else. Faith is now something else. Once something is complete, it's not what it was to start with. You could say now lumber is a house. There's a lot of things to compare this to. But the one thing that lumber is no longer is just lumber. It is a house. It has changed. Faith has changed, Barris, into something of substance now. It's not elusive. Faith was always elusive for man. Jesus proved man couldn't have it. Jesus said even if any human being ever had faith as the size of a grain of mustard seed, faith is so powerful that if a human being had it in the size of a grain of mustard seed, he would be able to say to a mountain, you would be able to say to the Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, right there east of where you are, be plucked up and cast into the sea.
Haven't met that man yet.
I haven't either. The Himalayas are still there. all of these mountain ranges have not been moved. So the fact that mountain ranges stay where they are outside of geological events proves there is no one on this planet that even has faith the size of a grain of mustard seed.
Benny Hinn notwithstanding.
Benny, goodness gracious.
Now, not a word. I'm going to read from the first verse of Hebrews 10. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come,
yeah,
not the very image of the things, can never, and it goes on to say what the law could never do. It couldn't produce substance, and in proving this, the writer says, the just shall live by faith. Isn't that the way it's written in the Old Testament? Isn't that the way it's written in the Scriptures, that the just shall live by faith?
Yes.
And if any man draw back, my soul will have no pleasure in him, but we're not of those who draw back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there wasn't one person of faith in the Old Testament that didn't draw back sometime. Even Moses wasn't allowed into the land because he drew back. They all drew back. So they didn't draw back under perdition, but of them that believed to the saving the soul, it's all about faithing. It's all about faithing. It's faithing in order to get something. It's faithing in order to be something. It's faithing in order to achieve an end. And remember, the Bible was not versified. It was never versified. Mm-hmm. So forget chapter 11 starts here. Just read on. Back to chapter 10, verse 1. The law couldn't do certain things. What certain things couldn't the law do? Well, you remember, the just shall live by faith. That's one thing that the law could not do. It could not live by faith. And the very next verse says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for.
It's just amazing. I'm flipping back here. The very first of these chapters is really remarkable. You're drawing my attention to something because we find out he's telling us what faith is no longer. He tells us what the law could not do in chapter 10. And in chapter 9, he's telling us what the first covenant and its ordinances were, what it used to be. Goodness, you go back to chapter 8. Now of these things which we have spoken, this is the sum. We have such high priest. The high priest ain't what the high priest used to be. The law isn't what the law used to be. Faith isn't what faith used to be. Chapter 6, therefore leaving the principles of the doctrines of Christ. Holy moly, leaving the principles of the doctrines of Christ? They're not what we thought they were.
Uh-oh. But now,
faith is the substance of all these things that all of Hebrews talks about. It has become the evidence of things not seen. The righteousness pursued by the law, even spoken of in this unity between God and man, the unity of the human race. Faith has done its work. Oh my gosh, I hope you love faith. I hope you adore faith. I hope you know you ain't got any. I hope you know that all of this powerful and conclusive union between God and man and the achievement of righteousness unattainable by the law and required by the law, faith has done it.
And
but it's not ours.
And it's done it by making us one. These having obtained a good report, verse 39 of chapter 11, through faith received not the promise. They were promised something. They didn't get the promise. God's a bad promiser. God having provided something better for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. There we see the oneness. Verse, and again, just reading straight on into chapter 12, wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with such a great cloud of witnesses, or seeing that we are all one, lay aside all these old weights. Lay aside the weights of of what was just a type and a shadow. Lay aside that sin. Why does it so easily beset us? Because we are conditioned to think that we are sinners.
Yes.
And what is the race that's set before us? We're going to run with patience this race that's set before us. We look at Jesus.
Yeah, that's where you look. It's just, hey, guess what chapter 13 starts with?
Oh, boy.
Let brotherly love continue. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. Aren't we just talking about strangers?
Strangers on the street of New York. Entertaining strangers.
Strangers, wow. In a burning building.
Oh, wow.
For thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Oh, wow. How powerful.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know. I that's a good place to stop, I reckon.
It probably is. Goodness gracious, what a run on Hebrews.
I don't think we can do any better than that, can we?
I can't. So if you can, we'll go ahead. I'll help you. That's wonderful, Bears.
Great stuff. Great stuff. And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank those who, with your financial support, keep this weekly PowerCast going out all the time. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and make Jeffrey's day. He's just waiting to hear from you. If you'd like to leave a message for the show, then call me. It's area code 234-564-0971, and you will make my day. I'm lonely. I'm waiting for your call. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, and from the highly polished Gospel Revolution headquarters in Houston, Texas.
This is Michael Williams. We love you guys. Oh, my gosh. We are entertaining angels. We are entertaining angels unawares. My goodness, what a powerful, powerful thing when we can bring this to the point where that it's about humanity. And, you know, today here in Houston, it's rainy, it's cold. I'm moving south. I don't know why anybody would want to live here.
So remember to join us again next week, angels. Same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Oh, it's always better.
That's a good show, mate.
It is a good show.
Now we become the sound of lovers singing. Now that you are my song,
only as directed. Absolutely no warranty expressed or implied. Contents under pressure. Use in a well-ventilated area. Do not use while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. No user serviceable parts inside. One size fits all. Parental guidance suggested. Severe pain has sometimes been reported and in rare cases, death. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure your prayer blessing. This supersedes all previous notices. This information is subject to change without notice. At all participating churches near you.
Gospel Revolution.